Adventures in Research.
Hear anything yet?
Not yet, sir.
Yes, that was it. That was the explosion. 1,000 miles away.
This is Paul Shannon introducing another in the series of programs dealing with the thrilling adventures to be found in the field of scientific research, as told by the men of science themselves. And here, ready with today's story, is Dr. Phillips Thomas, research engineer of the Westinghouse Research Laboratories.
Thank you, Paul, and hello, everyone. Not so long ago, the eyes of the whole world were turned to the tiny atoll of Bikini in the Central Pacific, where the history-making atomic bomb tests were made.
Yeah, I wasted a lot of time listening to them on the radio. And boy, was I ever disappointed.
Well, why were you disappointed? What was wrong with it?
Well, from all accounts, I figured maybe I'd be blown clear out of my chair by the explosion. And what happened? Nothing but a lot of static. Phooey.
Well, these tests, my friend, were made in the interests of science, not for your entertainment.
Well said, Paul. And certainly science has learned a great deal from these tests, and will continue to learn for years to come. Particularly interesting to those working on the relatively new science so far were the underwater atomic bomb tests.
Pardon me, Dr. Thomas, but what was that name again?
So far. S-O-F-A-R. So far.
Never heard of it, Dr. Thomas.
Well, then, suppose we drop in on the Neals. Their son, Tom, Lieutenant Thomas Neal of the Navy, is home on 15 days' leave.
Another piece of pie, Tom?
How about another cup of coffee, son?
No, thanks. Oh, I haven't eaten a meal like that since I came home on leave last time.
Well, oh, it's grand to have you home, Tom, but I suppose you'll soon be off again. How you can stand this gadding about all over the world is more than I can understand.
Our Tom's a Navy man. Has to go where he's sent, you know. He has a fine career ahead of him, Mother. Don't worry.
You bet. Say, I haven't told you about my new assignment yet. It's sure interesting.
Well, you two clear out into the living room so Millie can clear the table. And Tom, don't you dare do any talking till I come in. I don't want to miss a word.
All right, Mother. We'd better get out of here, Dad.
There. Now, Tom, what's this new assignment you were talking about?
Yes, let's hear about it.
Well, since it's no longer a war secret, you'll be hearing quite a bit about SOFAR. That's a new underwater sound system for locating planes and ship survivors at sea.
SOFAR? That's an odd name. What's it mean?
Doesn't mean anything, the word. They're just Navy initials to designate the system Sound Fixing and Ranging.
Hmm. Oh, so they're making use of your ability as an electrical engineer. Well, that's good.
That's what comes of having a father who's an engineer and a mother who's been listening to engineering talk all her life. You can't fool him.
Go on, son. Your mother just makes a wild guess now and then, and hits it right now and then, too.
Well, anyway, that's what my new assignment is, with SOFAR. I was lucky enough to be in on the experimental tests. That was during the war when SOFAR was tested as a system for detecting submarines, back in 41.
Oh, so that's what you were doing when you refused to answer any questions. Never saw anyone so close-mouthed.
Yes, naturally I couldn't tell you at the time.
Well, just what is this SOFAR, Tom? What's it do?
To answer that question, Dad, I'll have to go back to 1941, when a scientist, Dr. Maurice Ewing, who was then director of research and physics at the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute, talked with Navy officials of the Bureau of Ships about a new theory of what he called horizontal sound transmission.
I've been checking and rechecking this theory of underwater sound transmission for over 4 years, gentlemen. It's been tested on the Institute's research ship, and it works.
What conclusions did you reach on those tests, Dr. Ewing?
Briefly, my conclusions were that sound underwater can be heard from horizontal distances up to thousands of miles, provided that disturbing reflections could be cut out, and if delicate, precise amplifiers were used to intensify that sound.
Hmm.
The speed of sound beneath the ocean has already been checked at various depths, and the minimum speed, or velocity, has been found at about 4,000 feet.
The slowest rate of speed was 4,000 feet below the surface.
Yes. With higher velocities both above and below that depth, the ray paths followed by sound underwater are refracted, literally bent toward depths of lesser speed or velocity.
And your point is, Dr. Ewing?
Well, my point is that if a bomb is set off at a depth of 4,000 feet, a large part of the sound of its explosion will be refracted, or bent, upward and downward, crossing and recrossing this area, but never reaching either the surface or the bottom of the ocean.
And how do you propose to hear this sound, Dr. Ewing?
By means of a hydrophone lowered to the 4,000-foot depth.
Well, gentlemen, I'd like to hear some opinions from you.
Dr. Ewing's theory sounds feasible enough, but it's still only a theory. There are a few details I'd like to have cleared up, and then I suggest that a test be arranged to try it out.
Well, that's fair enough. The test is all I ask.
Well, the test was arranged. I was on the test ship, an 87-foot yawl, carrying the hydrophone, a sort of stethoscope with electrical amplifications.
Well, I'd rather be here than on the destroyer escort. They're the guinea pig ship, 1,000 miles away.
How do you mean guinea pig?
They're carrying the bombs for this test. Each one of them contains 4 pounds of TNT.
How do you think this test will work out?
Well, your guess is as good as mine. But we'll soon find out. Get ready to lower the hydrophone.
Ready to lower.
Lower to 4,000-foot level. Anything come through yet?
Not as yet. Seems we should hear...
That's it. I heard the explosion. I'd never have believed it that a sound could travel underwater from 1,000 miles away.
I think that all of us are convinced after that test that Dr. Ewing's theory of underwater sound transmission has proved itself right. However, I am of the opinion that more extensive tests are necessary to prove this theory beyond the shadow of a doubt. I suggest that arrangements be made to set up an experimental shore station to determine whether or not signals can be detected from various distances at sea.
Now they were really going after this thing in earnest. Dr. Ewing was working like mad, improving his equipment. And the experimental station was set up in the Bahamas, on Eleuthera Island.
Were you in this second test, too?
Yes, I was right at the experimental station with Dr. Ewing in the big brass hats when it happened.
Well, Dr. Ewing, this should tell the story. Worried?
Not a bit. I've tested this theory too many times myself to have any doubts about the outcome.
Good. Well, the stage is all set. A destroyer loaded with the bombs you developed for this test is lying off Dakar on the West African coast, ready to drop them.
Better concentrate, gentlemen. It's just about time.
We're ready. Stand by. There's the signal. There's the first bomb.
Sounds almost like a kettle drum building up to a grand finale.
The bombs are being dropped in series. That accounts for the kettle drum effect. What's the timing for the series?
24 seconds, sir.
Well, that checks with my time in 24 seconds.
And the sound at the point of explosion lasts less than a second. That means, gentlemen, that we can make time measurements to within 1/10 of a second.
And those bomb explosions were picked up by our hydrophones here in the Bahamas over a range of some 3,000 miles.
That's right, and no other natural or man-made sound has ever before been heard more than a fraction of that distance.
Well, Dr. Ewing, the evidence of these tests is most conclusive. Frankly, in the beginning, we were of the opinion that your theory of underwater sound transmission was nothing more than a clever laboratory trick.
Well, I don't blame you for thinking it.
But we've demonstrated that as a result of your speaking tube effect, sound travels amazingly far in the depth zone between 2,000 and 6,000 feet underwater.
And what impresses me is its simplicity. Your theory doesn't involve the use of such things as electronics, supersonics, or smashed atoms.
Precisely. The system has official approval and will be designated as SOFAR, Sound Fixing and Ranging.
Well, that was quite a triumph for this Dr. Ewing, wasn't it?
Yes, but he really worked hard. Spent years of research and mathematical calculation before he even approached anybody with his theory.
But, son, now the war's over, how will this SOFAR be used? Is it any good in peacetime?
Oh, yes, I should say it is. Its biggest job will be rescue work, locating men lost at sea from planes or ships.
Oh, how will it do that?
Well, it's a job for the shore stations, where three or more are listening for signals.
Why three or more stations?
Suppose there are survivors of a shipwreck or a plane down at sea. They're in a life raft, say.
Yes?
The life raft is equipped with these special bombs which are dropped into the ocean by the survivors. Now, the sound of the explosions are picked up by the shore stations, both by an amplifier and by a recording tape.
New developments already, huh?
Yes. And then three or more stations simply radio the information to a central point, where, by checking charts and tables, the exact location of the explosion and the life raft can be made to within a square mile or so.
Well, I never. Now, that's smart thinking.
Sure. That's the triangulation method.
Well, what does that mean?
Question of timing by mathematical calculation. Means laying out and measuring of triangles. Pretty much like three men can fix the position of a thunderstorm by timing the lightning flashes and thunderclaps by triangulation. Comparing times that signals are received.
Sure, that's the idea, Dad.
Is that all this SOFAR is good for? Rescuing people?
Seems to me it's doing a mighty big job, just rescuing people.
Oh, well, I didn't mean it that way. I mean, does it have any other use?
Oh, sure. According to Dr. Ewing, SOFAR can be a big help for locating unknown shoals. In fact, two uncharted shoals were discovered during the Bahama test.
That might help prevent shipwrecks if those shoals can be discovered and charted.
Sure. Another thing, SOFAR can be a big help in navigation. Why, Dr. Ewing claims that right now, SOFAR gives a more accurate fix than celestial navigation. Within a mile, he claims.
Well, it all sounds as though this SOFAR might really amount to something and help scientists find out things they didn't know before. Think you'll like it, Tom?
Sure, Mom. I'm tickled to death to be in the start, almost, of a new science. Or maybe I should say a new start on an old science, oceanography.
Oh, you and your big words. I haven't the faintest idea half the time what you two are talking about. You go right ahead, and I'll see how Millie's getting along in the kitchen.
You sold on this so far, son?
You bet I am, Dad. You'll hear more about it as time goes by. You'll see. One thing I do know, SOFAR is going to help me in my job when my leave's up.
What job is that, son?
Well, we're going to make a survey charts of the bottom of the ocean.
And there you have the story of SOFAR, the new underwater sound system that has revolutionized underwater sound transmission. An ocean-going adventure in research.
And telling the story was Dr. Phillips Thomas, research engineer of the Westinghouse Research Laboratories. Join us again next week when Dr. Thomas will be back with another interesting story to tell on Adventures in Research.